For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sask Egg Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Egg Today. Coming up on today's program, Saskatchewan Trade and Export Minister Jeremy Harrison was in Saskatoon this morning holding a news conference explaining the value of overseas trade missions to the provincial economy. He spoke about agriculture specifically. Meanwhile, canola producers in Alberta will have some additional markets for those bright yellow flowers. Strathcona County, just outside of Edmonton, is going to be home to Canada's largest renewable diesel facility. We'll have details on that as well. Also coming up on today's program, feeder steer prices in Saskatchewan were up compared to the heifers, which were mixed. Provincial cattle specialist Fonda Froats will join us. And a weekly overview of the wheat market has been provided by Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture in Winnipeg. We'll hear from him as well. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. Saskatchewan Trade and Export Minister Jeremy Harrison was in Saskatoon today, holding a news conference explaining the value of overseas trade missions to the provincial economy. The provincial government has been criticized for conducting trade missions to Southeast Asia and the Middle East. Harrison notes a trade mission to Vietnam in December of 2022 paid big dividends to the Saskatchewan economy. The federal government wanted to resolve an issue with Vietnam regarding $150,000 of blueberries from Prince Edward Island before talking about an issue impacting wheat trade with Vietnam.
Both their trade and their ag minister, the first issue they raised was, we want to buy more wheat from Canada, really Saskatchewan in a tangible way. We want to buy more wheat. There's an issue that exists. We want to resolve the issue, but Canada wants to talk about blueberries before they'll talk about wheat. And it was actually kind of surprising, I guess would be a mild way of putting it. Our officials and I, who were in these initial meetings, we knew there was an issue with resolving the wheat export phytosanitary issue, but we weren't quite sure what it was, and we found out very quickly from the Vietnamese what it was. We made clear our view as a province, which is that we need to resolve this wheat issue ahead of the $150,000 blueberry issue that you're seeking to leverage to have the wheat issue resolved. I would say that the embassy were quite helpful in that regard, but we had some very good discussions with the Vietnamese ministers at that level politically, and it was dealt with quickly, and they were very grateful. In fact, the ambassador was just here a couple of weeks ago talking about how we were able to resolve this publicly, and it has resulted for the Vietnamese. I mean, they did want to diversify where they were purchasing their wheat from, and, you know, understandably, in the aftermath of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, why they wanted to do that, to have a secure food supply. And, you know, we're going to be seeing nearly $200 million in wheat exports from Saskatchewan to Vietnam this year.
That's Saskatchewan Trade Minister Jeremy Harrison. Saskatchewan agri-food exports to all countries totaled more than $20 billion last year. Meanwhile, canola producers in Alberta will have some additional markets for those bright yellow flowers. Strathcona County, just outside Edmonton, is going to be home to Canada's largest renewable diesel facility. Construction on the project that's being funded by Imperial Oil is well underway, and the $700 million facility should be producing fuel sometime next year. The province's agriculture minister, R.J. Sigurdsson, was on hand for the announcement on Monday.
When the facility is fully operational, it will transform canola and other seed oils into renewable diesel that is lower in emissions than conventional fuels. To make this happen, Imperial will be sourcing most of its feedstock from canola producers right here in the province. In the meantime, construction is well underway, and the project is creating about 600 direct construction jobs for Albertans. Not only that, Imperial and the canola processors expect additional employment opportunities once the operation begins. Our government recognizes their business relationship will have invaluable economic spin-offs for Alberta's oilseed sector as well. We are pleased to know that Imperial will be sourcing low-carbon hydrogen for its operations from Air Products in Edmonton. Using low-carbon hydrogen to produce the lower-emissions renewable diesel will help cut greenhouse gases. As you can tell, this project has multiple benefits for Albertans.
Chris Vervaet is the executive director of the Canadian Oilseed Processors Association.
Local production of renewable fuels derived from locally grown canola provides an important market diversification opportunity right here in our own backyard that will benefit farmers, processors, and the entire value chain in the province of Alberta. To put a finer point on this opportunity, this facility represents demand for canola seed that could be as large as 2.5 million metric tons per year. That's the size of some of our largest export markets today. This is value-added demand, as seed will be processed locally, supporting investments, job creation, and prices at the farm gate. Simply put, a project of this magnitude is a game changer for our industry and a win-win for all parties involved.
Canola is Alberta's highest value crop, with farm cash receipts worth nearly $4 billion last year. It's time now for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of Bumper to Bumper in Langenberg and Rokenville, your auto parts professionals. Let them find the parts no one else can. Open 8 to 6 Monday to Saturday. Call 306-743-2332.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Beef and Forage Report.
For cow-calf operations, a major component of profitability is reproductive efficiency, or the number of calves weaned per cow exposed. When open rates are higher than expected, it can be difficult to pinpoint the cause. There may be many factors that contributed. Water quality in dugouts tends to decrease during dry conditions. When evaporation is high and recharge of surface water sources is low, dissolved solids like sulfates increase in concentration. Sulfates bind copper and other minerals in the animal's digestive system, rendering them unavailable to the animal. Over time, this contributes to deficiencies in cows, which can result in lower conception rates. Vitamin A is necessary for reproduction and synthesized in the rumen from carotenes found in fresh green forage. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
The Competition Bureau says it has identified major competition concerns around the proposed merger between U.S. grains merchant Bungie and Glencore-backed Viterra. In a statement accompanying a formal report to Ottawa, the Bureau said the deal was likely to result in substantial anti-competitive effects and a significant loss of rivalry between Viterra and Bungie in agricultural markets in Canada. It also determined that the transaction was likely to harm competition in markets for grain purchasing in Western Canada, as well as for the sale of canola oil in Eastern Canada. The non-binding report was sent to Canada's Transport Ministry, which has until June 2nd this year to review the deal. The federal government will make the final decision. Grain trader Archer Daniels Midland said on Monday that the chief financial officer, Vikram Luthar, will resign from his role effective September 30th. Luthar is the highest level executive to leave the firm since it disclosed accounting issues within its nutrition division that later triggered two government investigations and forced it to revise 6 years of financial data. ADM had put Luthar on administrative leave in January as it launched an internal investigation focused on accounting practices involving the smallest of its three business units. The company said Luthar will receive $743,419 in cash performance incentive award for 2023 and shares awarded in 2021 that were tied to company performance. He will remain at ADM in a non-executive capacity until his resignation date to provide transitional support as the company searches for a new CFO. Bayer confirmed its full-year forecast for earnings and cash flow on Monday. Despite slow business at its crop science and consumer health divisions, CEO Bill Anderson reiterated that 2024 earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, adjusted for one-off items and currency swings, would decline between 3 and 9%, and that free cash flow would reach 2 to 3 billion euros, up from 1.3 billion last year. Anderson will face investor questions at the AGM over his decision in March to pause plans to break apart the German diversified group, which includes a large pharmaceuticals business, for up to 3 years. He has said he would instead focus on a management overhaul, debt reduction, and fending off litigation. The European Parliament voted today to back a year-long extension to tariff-free trade for Ukrainian farm produce while introducing new curbs on the level of imports to assuage protesting EU farmers. It will now apply from June 6th after clearing this final procedural hurdle. The tariff liberalization, dating from June of 2022, was designed to help keep Ukraine's economy afloat as it battles Russia's invasion. The curbs means Ukraine will earn 331 million euros less from exports to the EU than in 2023, compared with 240 million in an original European Commission proposal. What might have been a routine rollover initially proposed in January turned into a drawn-out debate on the new curbs as protests by EU farmers mounted, notably in Poland. Wheat futures rallied to their highest point in 2 months yesterday, based on dry conditions in parts of Russia. Dan Bassey is the president of Ag Resource Company in Chicago.
The dryness in the southwestern areas of Russia, along with some concern about the European wheat crop, got funds to buy. We went up against the 100-day moving average and then backed off a little bit. But it's all about weather now. Will we get rain in the Western Plains? And was there any frost damage in the Midwest also being discussed? At least at this point, we don't think it's a lot, but it was an underpinning of the market.
Bassey notes it's been a long time since the Russians have had to deal with a major weather problem. It was also a good day for canola futures, with the May contract up $17.10 to $626.90 per metric ton, and the new crop November canola future price up $16.40 to $654.30 a metric ton. And Sask Ag Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose Sask Ag Today. And yes, it is free. And that's today's Ag Review. Please stay tuned. Sask Ag Today will return after these messages. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and 11 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Feeder steer prices in Saskatchewan were up compared to the heifers, which were mixed. Provincial cattle specialist Fonda Froats says the week-over-week changes are what they are due to limited sales of cattle last week.
For steers, there was just two categories reported. Both categories were up compared to the prior week. 600 to 700 pound feeder steers averaged 398 per hundredweight, and this was up 937 compared to the prior week. And the average price for the 700 to 800 pound steers also increased compared to the previous week by 250 per hundredweight to average 357 per hundredweight over the week. And Saskatchewan heifer prices were mixed, but mostly higher compared to the prices available on April 12th. Heifers also had limited data reported with prices available for just three categories. Average available prices range from 380.83 per hundredweight for the 500 to 600 pound heifers down to 285.59 for the 800 plus pound.
She says the continued strong prices were helped by lower supply, the Canadian dollar, and an upward trend in the futures market. The number of cattle marketed in the province was down to 8,830, compared to the 13,188 head marketed the previous week. Alberta cow prices, meanwhile, continue to rise.
Yeah, more good news here. Alberta cow prices were mixed compared to the previous week. D2 cows averaged 179.81 per hundredweight, a price increase of 527 over the previous week. And D3 cows were down just 50 cents per hundredweight to average 162.29 per hundredweight for the week. Alberta cow prices were at record highs again compared to the previous week. The CanFax price for Alberta fed steers for the week ending April 19th was $256.49 per hundredweight, and this was a price increase of $6.02 over the previous week, and again a record high for the second week in a row for that.
That's Fonda Froats, provincial cattle specialist, with the cattle market update for the week ending April 19th.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 177.15 today. That's down 90. August live cattle closed at 175.50, also down 90. May feeder cattle closed at 246.05, up 87. August feeder cattle closed at 259.40, up 92. May lean hogs closed at 98.57, that's up 187. June lean hogs closed at 107.95, up 245. And that's the livestock market conditions. A weekly overview of the wheat market has been provided by Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture. It was issued through the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission.
U.S. wheat futures ended the week mixed. Escalating geopolitical tensions between Iran and Israel supported commodity markets, but strong global competition and a stronger dollar offset some of the impact. And we'll start the comments for today on the International Grains Council, which released its April grain market report. The International Grains Council reduced global grain production for the upcoming year, so that's global grain production, by 10 million tons from its March grain market report. The decrease in production was largely driven by lower corn production, given Argentina's having some issues where inclement weather and corn stunt disease is tempering expectations for the corn production there. As far as wheat goes, global wheat production was decreased by 1.1 million tons in its March grain market report to 797.7 million tons. This is still a 1.1% increase from last year's wheat production. The decrease in production was led by a 1.8 million ton decrease in the European crop, or the EU crop rather. Larger crops, meanwhile, are being anticipated in the U.S. and China. The U.S. crop was increased by 1.2 million tons, while China's crop was up by 500,000 tons. the International Grains Council, decreased old crop ending stocks, so that's 23-24 crop year ending stocks, by 3.6 million tons. So this, coupled with lower production, caused global wheat total supply to be 4.7 million tons lower than last month at 1.1 billion tons. Global wheat use was decreased by 1.3 million tons, largely due to a 900,000 ton decrease in feed use. The International Grains Council expects that 24-25 crop year ending stocks will shrink by an additional 3.4 million tons to 259 million tons. This is now down 2% from the 23-24 growing season. And we will move on over to Canada. The AASC released its April version of the outlook for principal field crops, although they made no changes to the wheat balance sheet there for spring wheat or durum, I should mention. The AASC is still expecting that Canadian old crop exports will be 20 and a quarter million tons, which reflects a 2% decrease from last year, and this number, of course, is far too low. As far as our up-to-date export data goes, week 37 wheat exports from Canada were very strong again in week 37 at 514.6 thousand tons. Year-to-date exports are now 15.3 million tons, which is 7% ahead of last year. The current export pace annualizes to a total of 21.5 million tons, which would be 4% more than the year before. For durum, we had a Tunisia tender where they bought 25,000 tons of durum for a price that was $7.40 per ton less than their previous tender that happened on April 5th. It does not look like Canadian durum traded at this tender. However, the price that was traded does calculate back to the elevator in Saskatchewan to about $10.30 per bushel. This is approximately 10 cents per bushel less than the average price of Tunisia's last purchase. This was largely due to the decrease in the Canadian dollar. There was talk that this purchase was to resupply a rejected durum cargo that was likely Turkish durum. Usually Tunisia buys more than just one cargo at a time, so this would kind of make sense. Although the price of Tunisia's tender was lower, price indications in the EU have risen over the past couple of weeks. Prices in France and Italy were said to have risen by 3 to 5 euros per ton over the week. We saw some durum specials in southern Saskatchewan last week as some elevator companies are putting together programs to ship through Thunder Bay. Canadian durum exports in week 37 were 115.7 thousand tons, so quite strong, I note. Most of the vessel exports were from the St. Lawrence. St. Lawrence shipped 91,000 tons of the weekly volume. Year-to-date, durum exports are now 34% behind last year's volume at 1.5 million tons, but remain on the AAFC's pace of 3.2 annual exports. So we're in good shape there. We'll stay on durum for a second. We had some news from the European Union. Durum wheat production in the EU is expected to fall by 5% from last year to 6.7 million tons in the upcoming crop year. If true, this would be the lowest volume since records began. I have my numbers go back to 1993, so 30 years ago. The recent rise in durum prices is a good opportunity to finish old crop durum sales if you have not already done. We are sold out of old crop durum and 30% sold new crop production. We'll head on over to the U.S. Moisture conditions are rapidly deteriorating in the U.S. winter wheat belt due to a lack of rain and strong winds. 24% of the U.S. winter wheat crop is under drought conditions, compared to 18% last week. 65% of the Kansas winter wheat crop is under drought. The condition of the U.S. winter wheat crop declined by 1% from last week to 55% good to excellent. Condition ratings in the top producing state, Kansas, were down 6% to 43%, good to excellent. Conditions in the neighboring state, Oklahoma, were down 8 points to 60%, good to excellent. U.S. weekly wheat sales were net cancellations of 94,000 tons, given two recent cargo cancellations by China. This was still within trade expectations. Total sales, so this is total annual commitments, are now 18.7 million tons, which is 1% above last year, compared to the USDA's estimate for a 4.5% decrease. Having canceled an additional 123.7 thousand tons worth of sales last week, China still has 103,000 tons worth of unshipped wheat on the books, so we're a little bit nervous about additional cancellations there. We shall see. In Australia, Australian futures rose to an 8-week high. Western Australia remains concerningly dry, and farmers are not selling. In Argentina, BAT says the seeding conditions in Argentina are strong, but forecasts that seeded area will be 6 to 7% lower than last year. The USDA attaché in Argentina is forecasting that wheat production there will grow by 1.1 million tons, that's 7% from the previous season, to 16.8 million tons. The increase in production is expected to come entirely from better yields, as harvested area is forecast to be 100,000 hectares lower. Low beginning stocks means that total supply will be slightly lower, 300,000 tons lower than the previous year, at 18.6 million tons. A slight decrease in exports and robust domestic consumption is expected to keep use steady. Ending stocks are expected to continue to decline year over year, this year by another 300,000 tons or 2% from last year, to 18.6 million tons. Remember that last year, Argentinian wheat suffered some drought conditions which impacted their yields, and so this is supposed to be better in this upcoming year. In the European Union, the USDA attaché in the EU is estimating that total wheat production in the member states will be down by 4% from last year on a combination of less seeded area and smaller yields. Excess moisture in Western Europe, especially France, and dryness in Eastern Romania and Bulgaria delayed seeding operations and, importantly, crop growth. The attaché is estimating that old crop ending stocks will be 17.5 million tons compared to the USDA's official estimate of 16.7 million tons, so they're higher. Now, both of these estimates are still well below the EU Commission's estimate of 21.1 million tons of ending stocks. Larger ending stocks, but less production and imports means that total supply in the upcoming year is expected to fall by 4% from last year to 156 million tons. This is according to the USDA. Fewer exports, but larger domestic use means total consumption will grow slightly, 1%, as ending stocks fall 20% to 14.1 million tons. Again, the USDA is probably too high or too low there, given their ending stock number for the previous season was too low. So just something to note. Winter wheat crop ratings in France fell by another 1% to 64% good to excellent. This compares with last year when their crop was considered 94% good to excellent. And in the Black Sea, dryness in Russia's southern region is becoming a concern. This area accounts for roughly 31% of the country's winter wheat crop. Despite a major freight disadvantage, Ukraine won last week's gas tender, so that is Egypt's buying, because Russia has still maintained their floor price on these public tenders. We mentioned the gas tender and Tunisia and the wheat sales, so there were no other cash trades that we heard of, but we do know that many of the international buyers are indicating that they are covered into new crop. And so we will continue to see a thinning of the old crop market. With that said, we've seen very little cash trade for new crop. So we expect there'll be a slurry there eventually, maybe when the new crop is a little bit better known. Some of the other significant events that happened last week, we'll need to follow tensions in the Middle East, which supported energy markets, and some of this interest trickled over into grains. The market is hugely concerned and uncertain about what's going to happen there. In addition, Russia launched another series of attacks on Ukraine's port city of Odessa. We did hear that some port infrastructure was damaged. Again, it's hard to tell what the overall impact of this will be. Ukraine's shipping remains incredibly resilient. The US dollar index rose to 106.1, which weighed on US prices. As far as the outlook goes, geopolitical tensions are causing additional uncertainty in the commodity markets. There is currently a standoff between the fund short and farmer holding. Mind you, we would use this rally to finish up old crop wheat sales. However, we would not sell any new crop for now.
That's Michael Wilton of Mercantile Consulting Venture in Winnipeg. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up in 1 minute's time.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. May canola closed at $634.40. That's up $7.50. July canola closed at $646.20, up $5.60. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $666.50. That's up 10¾¢. May Kansas City wheat closed at $608¾, up 11¼¢. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.85 per bushel, up 14¾¢. May corn closed at $4.43 per bushel, up 3¼¢. May soybeans closed at $11.67¹. That's up 6½¢. May oats closed at $3.67¼, up 4¾¢. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. Your Farm Bulletin Board is coming up right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Farm Credit Canada is now accepting applications from registered charities, nonprofit organizations, and First Nations, Métis, and Inuit governments and communities in rural Canada for the FCC AgriSpirit Fund. The fund supports capital projects that enrich the lives of residents in communities with fewer than 150,000 people. There is a total of $1.5 million in funding available. Projects can receive between $10,000 and $25,000. Examples of projects include greenhouses, community gardens, and other agriculture and food-related initiatives, refrigeration and equipment to support food waste reduction and recovery, projects that improve accessibility and inclusion, or upgrades that reduce a building's energy footprint. The application deadline for the 2024 fund is May 15th. Applicants can view the eligibility requirements, past projects, and apply online by visiting www.fccagrispiritfund.ca. FCC will announce the selected projects in the fall. Since its inception of the FCC AgriSpirit Fund in 2004, FCC has supported 1,615 capital projects in rural Canada, totaling $21 million in donations. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's coming up on 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Mainly sunny, winds north-northeast at 15 to 25, and a high of 13 degrees. For tonight, a few clouds, wind south-southeast at 15 to 25, a low of 2. For tomorrow, early sunshine, then turning partly cloudy, wind south-southeast at 15 to 25, a high of 19, an overnight low of 8. For Thursday, partly sunny, winds west-southwest at 15 to 25, a high of 23. Friday, partly to mainly sunny, a high of 17, and Saturday, partly sunny, a high of 9. In the Paw, it's 2 degrees, Swan River is at 8, Dauphin 7, Brandon 10, Show Lake Russell 9, Roblin 11. Regina is at 15 degrees, Saskatoon 16, Hudson Bay 10, Broadview Mooseman 11, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington 13. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, a south wind at 11 kilometers an hour. 31% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 11 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.